Stephen.
Hello, Stephen. Long time no here.
Yeah, it's been a couple of weeks. I've been tied up with the fundraising campaign for my new online video music channel that's going to have the
New Music Nation.
Going to have the spirit of Much Music and going to focus on Canadian independent artists, not going to kowtow to big record labels. I got new VJs I've been training. People can go to newmusicnation.ca. You can see four of the VJ bios and the launch video for the channel. And if you're so inclined, you can support us at Indiegogo, which you just, at newmusicnation.ca, you click the Indiegogo logo, and it takes you to Indiegogo, which will list a number of different perks that you get for contributing different amounts of money. So it's not just putting the money in, you get something back out of it. So now, I've been very tied up.
Did I see that there's Ed the Sock socks again?
Nope, they haven't been in there.
Oh, they haven't. Oh, well, I got myself a pair of those at some earlier event that you did, and they're my favorites.
Well, thank you. No, those may go up to try to boost interest again, because you know you get a burst when you start, and then you're beating the horse for a month. It's usually busy the first week, which it was, quiet second and third week, which we're in the second week now. Tomorrow will be in the entering the third week. Last week tends to get busy, but we'll see. Whatever amount of money is raised will be used to bring this stuff to life.
Well, that's great. You know, I'm not involved, but I'm still hoping for an invitation to Ed's Hot Tub.
That thing's long gone.
Oh,
that thing's long. And I like
now
you too
much
to ever have let you in there.
Well, it looked like a party. I'm not going to say what kind of party, but it was a thing.
Yeah, it was. You think people need to wear masks now to stop the spread of a virus?
It was just like a big, what was it that Seinfeld said? A big bacteria frappe?
Yeah, yeah. Something like that. It was tons of chlorine in there. I'm sure nobody got sick. Speaking of getting sick, I was asked to be part of a CBC radio production, which took place yesterday. And for the first time in about a year, I drove into Toronto. The furthest I've gone is the outskirts of Toronto at the Steeles area to visit my parents.
Oh, that's really the outskirts of Toronto. For those of us who live downtown, it's like, yeah. Steeles? It's like, isn't that near Timmins?
Yeah, exactly. So I haven't been into the city. And I have to tell you, it was an eerie, spooky experience. Having to remind myself it was a weekday and not maybe the Saturday or Sunday of a long weekend, which sometimes thins out downtown. But usually then I said no, because then people come into town for the long weekend. I've never, ever seen streets that sparse, maybe late at night. I've seen streets that sparse, but I don't even think they were that sparse late at night. It was just peculiar. Like, there's a very odd feeling. I living as I do and working from home for years and years, there hasn't been that much of a change to my life. And so I haven't really seen or felt the full impact of COVID on the city until I went and saw the full impact of COVID on the city. It was tumbleweed could be blowing through there. And it was,
did you see Will Smith walking his dog?
That's what I kept thinking. I was going to see Will Smith driving around with a German Shepherd in the passenger side. It was,
it is weird. I haven't had occasion to go downtown. Last time I was down was just before the last lockdown, and I had to do a quick pickup of something downtown. But, I've been riding the subway a couple of times in the last, 6 months. And, not that I sit down. I don't touch, at the best of times, I don't touch anything on the subway. I don't touch the rails. I don't touch the walls. I don't touch myself. I don't touch anything. The subways are looking actually pretty clean. I guess because, you know, all kinds of people aren't there dirtying it up. And, I didn't feel unsafe at any point. Everyone is masked up. But the streets, I mean, that's the Danforth, where I live close to the Danforth, and it seems to be pretty busy. There's a lot of families walking around. I mean, it's a high traffic area at the best of times, and mm-hmm. there's some parks around here. So, you do see people wandering around. But as soon as you get off the beaten path, there's nothing.
Yeah, it's really, like I said, it's eerie is the best word I can use. Though I have to say, heading south, it was the first time I was on the Gardner or the Don Valley Parkway and the Gardner Expressway and didn't have to stop, didn't have to deal with traffic. However, the DVP renewed my faith in it when going home, it was jammed all the way to the Gardner Expressway, all the way pretty much till Steeles.
Yeah, well, it's going to be interesting to see how we adjust to, getting back to normal. If anyone flipped the big switch and we had to get back to actually interacting and avoiding other people with our vehicles, it's going to be an adjustment. You know, if we get back to that kind of normal, I assume we will. I don't mean vaccine wise. I just mean psychologically. So many people have been displaced. They're not going downtown. Aren't working downtown. Kind of like working remotely. Unless you've got kids, in which case you're looking forward to going to the office. But it's I miss my lunches. I miss my dinners. I've worked from home for the last decade and a bit. So, if I go downtown, it's either for a meeting or it's for a, for a social occasion. And I'm looking forward to getting back to that. But, just going downtown for the sake of hanging out at the Eaton Center, mm-hmm. I don't think a lot of people are going to be doing that.
I wonder whether the handshake will ever make a return. At this point in time, I wonder if it's going to be fist bumps going forward.
Oh, I hate the fist bumps.
What's that?
I hate the fist bumps. Why I hate the elbow hate bumps. I don't know why. I feel like I'm 11 years old when I'm doing it.
Well, I think you may have to get maybe stuck with it.
Or the high fives. I've never been a high fiver.
No, high fives. I draw the line at high fives. But the I think the handshake may be done at least. Short term, medium term, the handshake may be done. It may be a while till people are comfortable touching each other's flesh again, which means, of course, that
well, speak for yourself.
Which means, of course, that ritual, that manly ritual of shaking someone's hand and each of you trying to break the other one's hand to show how strong your grip is, you can't do that with a fist bump. No. I always thought that the Japanese method of bowing was perhaps the most sensible.
Yeah, well, it solves a lot of problems, that's for sure. I'm not sure. I think I'd feel a little self-conscious doing that too. So far, I've just been avoiding people, so I don't have any problems with any of it.
Well, that's the other option. And there's, we've got the vaccines. People are getting them a little slower than
I think. I told you I got my. Was it our last recording, which was a little while ago? I think I'm 3 weeks and a bit now from my first shot of AstraZeneca.
And when are you supposed to get your second?
Oh, God knows. And that's going to be that's the problem. It's something I put out on Twitter, which is all right. They're getting vaccines into arms in kind of a haphazard kind of way, but there's a whole different level of organization involved in. Marking the people who had their first shot and now are ready for their second shot and calling them up. I mean, I was sent away. I got mine done at Shoppers Drug Mart and just my local pharmacy did it. And it was remarkably easy at that time.
Did you get any optimum points?
You don't get optimum points for nothing these days.
Yeah, no kidding.
Nothing you ever buy gives you optimum points.
No.
I got my shot and I said, okay, when do I come back for the next one? He said, well, someone will contact you.
Oh, it's the famous someone will contact you.
It was the someone part.
Yeah.
It's not like you say, we don't really know. I said, well, when will it be? And he said, well, it'll be, 3 to 4 months. And there was there wasn't a lot of commitment in that either. It's like, you know, they're just going by the seat of their pants. So like I say, you know, rounding up people and giving them their first shot, I mean, that there's obviously challenging enough because Ontario is still really struggling with that. But the idea of, okay, now you've had your first shot, we're going to identify you, we're going to call you, we're going to have vaccine in your neighborhood ready and give you an appointment. I'm very fearful that that is going to be well beyond the organizational capacity of whoever is in charge. And I may not get my call from someone sometime in the next 2 to 3 months.
Well, in my experience, someone is closely related to no one.
Yes.
And, you know, when it's everybody's job or somebody's job, it's nobody's job. And that's why it's disturbing the lack of, I mean, we had a general, for crying out loud, implementing this. He didn't seem to do much of a job, because this could have been put together by, I swear we could have made this a science project for kids in junior high school and they would have done a better job.
Well, and there's so much time. I mean, everyone, you know, at the beginning, you know, we're now talking 13, 14 months ago when, mm-hmm. you know, it started to look serious and lockdowns are happening and everyone's going like, no, this just isn't another flu. This is a serious disease. And say, okay, boy, if we only had a vaccine, it would be so great. And, you know, they talked about when we're going to have a vaccine, a vaccine's going to solve our problems. And 11 months, 10 months go by and we finally have a vaccine. And now everyone's looking at each other going, well, now what do we do? It's like, well, what did you do for 10 months saying we needed the vaccine? How about planning for the fact that we might have a vaccine and get stuff in order so when we do have it, you hit the ground running?
Yeah, there's no excuse for
and
them.
Now it's months later and we still don't have a plan.
Yep, there's no excuse for them being caught by surprise. They should have had contingency plan on top of contingency plan for receiving vaccines. And the fact that when they got it, they're like, it's like somebody juggling a hot potato. Here, I don't want it, you take it. No, I don't want it, you take it. And now we have Jake Tapper, who I dislike tremendously on CNN.
Oh, really?
I disliked him before this. I find him smarmy. I turned off CNN a long time ago because of people like Jake Tapper. But he went on TV and said that this is the vaccine rollout is a failure of the Trudeau government and Canada deserves better. Now, he obviously isn't aware that our system doesn't work like their system and that the provinces are in charge of distributing the vaccine. But why should that stop an American from weighing in on a Canadian issue?
Well, I mean, I said on Twitter earlier this week that, you know, the one thing he did accomplish is get a whole bunch of conservatives excited about CNN.
Yeah.
Because, you know, none of them watch that. And then, no. You know, then he spoiled it by turning around and saying, but that Mulroney, you know, he canceled the Canada's vaccine facilities. So, you know, when they say, okay, now the conservatives are mad at him again. But, you know, he doesn't seem, I followed a little bit of it and he was kind of asking for clarification from some people on Twitter about what Canada's vaccine procurement and distribution regime is like, mm-hmm. and you know the nature of our federal system. And I thought, you know, if you're going to weigh in, and you know, Jake Tapper, smart guy, involved in stuff, whether you like him or not, he seems to be relatively plugged in, but he seemed to have waded into an area where he didn't really know an awful lot about how things are going here. And you know, it's true, our vaccine delivery system has been just a mess from province to province to province, especially the bigger provinces. It's been a problem. And the idea that Canada was, you know, there's a conservative trope that, you know, Canada was late to the table in getting, you know, lining up and placing orders of the vaccine, mm-hmm. which, you know, just isn't true. I mean, we were just a couple of days behind the United States ordering vaccines. And in fact, I just actually tweeted it out to somebody who was, you know, going after something I said with that meme.
Yeah.
And the National Post, you know, had an article in December of 2020, and the headline was, Canada, the biggest hoarder of COVID vaccine, pre-orders in the first world.
Yeah.
Like, well, which one is it? Pick a lane. Are we really inept, or are we greedy pigs for a vaccine? Which one is it? Because it can't be both.
I think that Canadians have been patient, but the patience is wearing out. I think that whoever is in government at whatever level is going to wear this, because Canadians are just blaming government, period. Government, big G. Yep. You can't tell them it's somebody else's jurisdiction. They don't care. They want these vaccines, and they want them now, and they want to know when they're going to get them. They want some sort of plan out there, so that it doesn't seem like chaos that is being made up as you go. It seems like Wile E. Coyote when he would make an invention, and he would fly it off a cliff. And he'd sit there okay until he looked down. And that's when he started to fall. And this is what's happening with the Ontario government. As soon as they discover that, you know, they finally wake up and see that there's a problem, they fall down on the job trying to fix it. Because this latest stay-at-home order, I don't really think it's going to flatten anything. I think what's going to flatten it is the warmer weather. The schools being shut down, I think, is a good move, because there was correlation between schools being open and spread happening.
Oh, absolutely. So
I think that, you know, he finally relented and closed the schools. I think that will have an effect on bringing the numbers down. The fact that the weather is better, as we saw last year, it receded when the weather got better. That will bring it down. But these lockdown stay-at-home measures, I really don't think that they're sensible. You know, personal care services, barbers, hair salons, things like that. These people were taking great care. I know that when Leanna went to get her hair cut, when the stuff was open, they took appointments only from regular customers, and they only had two people in the salon at a time. And it's a large salon, and they were far apart from each other, you know, like one's getting their hair cut, one's getting their hair washed. Like, they're not in the same place, the same station at the same time. And they were meticulous about maintaining, proper precautions. And they're not the people that are causing the spread. You know, they're the retail stores where they limited the number of people in the store, and where they constantly walked around cleaning surfaces and disinfecting. They weren't the cause of the spread either. So closing them, people will see, when the numbers go down, they'll say, see, keeping it closed lowered the numbers. Well, it doesn't make any sense, because a lot of them were closed before the numbers went up. They were closed when the numbers went up. So them being closed when the numbers go down, there isn't any mathematical support that them being closed was a factor. You know, people say that any activity that gets people out and about is going to promote spread. And I don't think that's necessarily true, as long as people are, and where I go, I mean, I'm north of the city, but where I am, everybody's in masks. Everybody maintains a distance from each other. In lines, there's a good distance. Everyone maintains a distance from each other. There's no arguments, no trouble. And we don't have a real spread up here. And I think that's because people just are shrugging and saying, okay, this is what I need to do. And I think a lot of people are doing that. The spread is caused by the people who reject the science, and or who just find the science very inconvenient for them. Because if they believe the science, it means that their conscience tells them they have to mask up and they have to behave. So if you say you don't believe the science, then it's not just you being a brat and being selfish. It's you saying that you're smarter than the average bear. And those are the people having parties, which it boggles my mind, people having parties, and the police are always busting them. And so they must be happening. But it boggles my mind how people, you know, it's one thing if you break the stay-at-home order and you drop by a friend's place, and it's you and your friend, or you and two friends, or something like that, and you keep your distance, and you keep masked, but you have a little human contact. That's different than parties where people are, it's wall-to-wall people, cheek to jowl, and most aren't wearing masks. Even if they were wearing masks in that environment, it's the people are too close together. There's a really huge gulf between those kinds of things. And that's the problem, is the people who either ignore the science or deny the science because it's, you know, it's inconvenient, or just contrarians, or are making a political statement by going against the prevailing recommendations, even though they come from conservative and liberal governments. That doesn't matter. So it's that's where the problem is. And it's only going to go away when more people are vaccinated. We're going to have rises and falls in COVID numbers. It's never going to go away completely. With luck, it will recede to the point where it doesn't require hospitalization, because that's the big deal, is the number of ICU beds being taken over and the strain on the system because of COVID cases. So I think realistically the goal is to get COVID to a point where people aren't regularly requiring hospitalization, because yeah. COVID is, we've never beaten a virus before. COVID is not going to suddenly go away because we have a vaccine. People will still get COVID. It will be milder. It'll still possibly knock you on your ass. Like I've had flus that have just knocked me right out. Now this is not a flu, but they're trying to get it to the point where, because of the vaccine, it will be not much worse than a flu.
And that's the thing that people go on about shopping for vaccines. They're like, well, I'm not going to take the AstraZeneca one because of blood clots and a lower efficacy rate. But people don't realize that the major vaccines that are out there, of the top three, basically, they all have the bottom line most important efficacy rate, which is 100% protection against dying. You've got different rates of, may you get COVID? And those numbers change back and forth because we see it being rolled out in the real world. The numbers change quite a bit. AstraZeneca is actually a little higher than it was originally suggested to be. We in the real world, vaccinations and vaccines and viruses act differently than they do in the lab. Mm-hmm. But the most important thing is, whether it's Pfizer, Moderna, or AstraZeneca, all of them have a 100% efficacy against dying in an ICU. You could get it still, but there's a big, like you said, there's a big difference between getting it and feeling crappy for a couple of days and getting it and going into the ICU and being intubated and possibly dying from it, and all of the vaccines. So the people who shop, they're like, well, I'm going to wait for, my, the thing that Oprah says I should be getting. That is just wasting time when you could be vaccinated by something else. So, when I heard I was getting AstraZeneca, it's like, sure, I'll get it. The best vaccine is the first one you can get because it'll protect you from dying regardless which one you get.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not going to be fussy. I will take whichever one is offered to me first, and yeah, I'll take it happily.
And if you're getting other vaccines, you're taking your kid in for a tri-booster, measles, whooping cough, whatever else, you don't say, well, who made this? And is there a better one? Well, like maybe some people do, and I'm sure doctors love seeing those people showing mm-hmm. up. But it's just like, I'm going in for my mumps shot. It's like, it's a mumps shot. And another interesting statistics that I just saw, you learn all kinds of stuff trolling around, as long as you fact check first, that the when the first polio vaccine came out, and I think it was 1953, early 1950s, it was less efficacious than AstraZeneca. It was around 62% coverage, but it still beat polio. Yeah. Because polio disappeared. Now the new polio vaccines, we've been able to do all kinds of stuff to juice it up and tailor it to specific genomes and all the rest of the stuff. But back then, we eradicated polio with something that's less efficacious than AstraZeneca.
Yeah.
And that was a big deal.
people welcomed that vaccine. I don't think I wasn't back there, but I don't remember ever reading history of that time where there was a backlash and people saying that there's a conspiracy and all the rest of it. I think people were just thirsty for relief from polio.
Yeah, and you know, and it was partially the nature of the disease too, because polio predominantly affected children, and you know, when your children are dying, or being put in an iron lung, or being handicapped, it was a terrible thing. You know, FDR got it late in life. FDR didn't get it until into his 30s, but it left him partially paralyzed from the waist down. And when you see your children dying, then parents got very, very serious about, I don't care what it is, give it to me, give it to my kid, give it to anyone who can pass it to the other one. So there really was a public, like you say, a real public support for getting vaccinated. You know, the March of Dimes was created basically as the pro-polio vaccination organization to get people vaccinated. But now, the vaccine hesitancy is just crazy. You know, the stuff that I hear, I'm worried that it has eggs in it, and I'm allergic to eggs, or it's going to change my DNA. It's like, none of that stuff's true. I've got allergies, and generally people with allergies have no problem with it whatsoever. And blood clots, I mean, we go on a great length about the rarity of blood clots. I think Canada had its first side effect of a blood clot. It was in Quebec just this week, and they caught it. Woman's fine. They gave her anti-clotting, and it doesn't look like she's going to have any long-term things. But it happens one in a million times. And the problem is, people want to live a risk-free life, and every vaccine comes with a risk. You know, whether you're getting, your hepatitis shot that you're supposed to get every 10 years, comes with a risk. It comes, statistically, there's going to be one in a million, two in a million, 10 in a million who have a bad effect, which might include death. You know, it's just the risk you have to take, because yes, that one person will have a bad outcome, but the other 999,999 are going to be okay, instead of people dying of COVID. And it's you've got a I'm not sure, it's a 25 or a 50% bigger chance of dying of COVID than you do of the of a side effect from one of the vaccines. But people are still hesitant, because we've got this culture now where everyone wants to know what's in their food, and if it's organic, and if it's free range, and I don't put any, I need more selenium in my diet. I'm not putting any selenium in my diet. Everyone has just become so obsessed with the stuff that's well outside their pay grade, and trying to understand the chemistry and the biology and all the rest, that they want to live this perfectly risk-free life. And every time you step behind the wheel of a car, every time you step off the curb, every time you go out in the garage and work on something, you're running risks. And most of those risks are far bigger than the risk that you run from taking the COVID vaccine.
Well, the most dangerous place is at home. The statistically the most dangerous place is at home. So, people, they take for granted, because those risks are daily and they rarely lead to injury or death. They're familiar with those risks to the point where they become background noise. But this is a new risk that people want to feel like they're taking control of their destiny at a time when they feel completely out of control, that their life is being controlled elsewhere, because it is, in some respects. I think the difference between when the polio vaccine came out and now is the internet. We didn't have people didn't have a means, a mass media means of distributing false science and scaremongering back then. I'm sure there was some, but it didn't have the highway that it has now to reach so many people. And I think that is the difference, is no one wants to feel like a dupe. No one wants to feel like they're being experimented on. No, and so people, I guess, have a greater aversion to it than me, or less of a trust. I mean, I trust in, and we've talked about this before, I trust in the vaccines, because I trust in the companies, the pharmaceutical companies' desire to stay in business. And if something went wrong with a high-profile vaccine like this, that could be the end of them. And so just selfish motives make them, drive them to make this as efficient and as safe as possible. So, you know, people say, well, corporations trying to cut costs. Yeah, not on something like this, because this could boomerang and put them out of business.
Yep, absolutely. And, you know, and they found there's a study, and I was just looking for it because I think I put it up on Twitter a few days ago, and you know how Twitter works. Once you release it into the wild, it's gone forever. You never see it again. But if I do find it, I'll post it along on our Facebook page. But they found that it was like 85% of all of the vaccine misinformation when it comes to COVID come from six sources. Six people, you know, and one of them is Kennedy, of the Kennedy Kennedy Jr., who was a notorious anti-vaxxer. And these people, like you say, because of the internet, have a big megaphone, and the pass along rate is enormous for this stuff. But they really, you know, these people did a study of how these things go viral, and they brought more than 80% of all the misinformation about vaccine hesitancy with the COVID vaccine to these six people's accounts. And, you know, that's the effect of kind of a wildfire that you can have on the internet, especially on Twitter and Facebook, where these things get amplified and passed along, and they're just not true, but they are, believed as articles of faith by people who say, I read this thing, and, you know, someone will do the fake thing and they'll slap the Mayo Clinic's logo on it and say, this is what the Mayo Clinic says about it. And it's like, no, they never really said that. But by the time you've busted that myth, it's been passed on to a couple hundred thousand other people, and there's no way you're going to get to all of them, but, you know, to correct the record.
Well, and, when the correction to the record comes out, there's a lot of people who say that that's the misinformation.
Yeah, exactly. That's, you know, that's big pharma coming together and protecting themselves now, because, you know, there's so many truth talkers out there. And now, you know, people, it's like, oh, really?
Yeah, it's a catch-22 situation. And you know what they say, that a lie gets halfway around the world before the truth has time to get its pants on.
Yeah.
And the internet has proven that to be absolutely true. So I think eventually there will be some kind of herd immunity, because enough people are going to get the shot that, and I think that those people who don't get the shot, I think they may very well find themselves with COVID, and that'll be some kind of comeuppance for them.
Yeah, well, and you see that now. I mean, there's pockets of anti-measles, you know, anti-vaccination people, and you see these pockets of measles outbreaks taking place, and not taking place in necessarily poor neighborhoods or, you know, immigrant neighborhoods, I think, because those people get vaccinated. They're taking place in white, rich, white collar neighborhoods, you know, in California and Rosedale and places like that, where, you know, there's a big outbreak in BC not too long ago. And it's all of these people who think they know better, and they've believed all of the anti-vaxxer stuff. And all of a sudden you've got these diseases, which are really rare now, but are potentially incredibly serious, that are, you know, the herd immunity isn't doing anything for them, because there's enough of them together that they can pass it among each other. Parents who are like-minded, who have their kids all at the same summer camp or in the same Montessori kindergarten. Mm-hmm. And next thing you know, you've got these outbreaks, and no one knows where herd immunity kicks in. You know, people say, well, maybe 70%. Well, you know, we're at 15% vaccination right now in Canada. We got a long way to go to 70, but it's not even sure it's going to be 70. It could well be 90%. It all depends on the disease. And you're still going to get these pockets of people who, you know, if they're in contact, it just means it's not going to spread right through the community, but it may be a real hotspot again in a certain part of the community that'll affect 20, 30, 50 people. And, you know, it's so unnecessary.
Yeah, and that's the sad part, is that you've hit on there, is that it is unnecessary. I think that the world has just become so big and unfathomable to people that and makes people feel small, that I think that having contrarian views makes them feel big again. makes them feel like they're taking control of their lives.
And everyone likes to think that they have secret knowledge that, you know, that
yeah, makes some arcane special. Lore.
It's like, you know, if you know, you found something on the internet that all the world's best scientists have overlooked. Okay. Kudos to you.
Yeah. And let's talk about the probabilities of that being accurate.
Yep, slim to none. I think put it right up there with Elvis, Bigfoot, and the moon landing was faked.
I love Bigfoot.
well, who doesn't?
What's that?
Well, who doesn't?
Oh, who doesn't love? Yeah, I love Bigfoot. The interesting thing in Ontario is the fact that vaccination appointments are being canceled en masse because of lack of supply, yet the province has supply in their freezers.
You know, and that I don't get because, you know, as of the most recent numbers, Ontario has administered 73.5% of the 4.5 million available doses of vaccine. So, you know, the number, you know, is usually given right there is about 1.2 million doses sitting in the freezer.
Yeah. And I don't understand. Are you saving them for a rainy day? Because it's raining.
Well, I mean, a couple of things, you know, some of them have expiration dates. And the rest of them, it's like someone who's starving to death, you know, poor person who's starving to death, who has a fridge full of food, and they go like, no, that's future food. But I'm starving right now, but I can't touch that food because that's for the future. It's like, you know, when you have nothing in your freezer, and this goes for the doubly for the province of Ontario, when is not a single dose left in the province of Ontario, then you can say we are out of vaccines. Until then, you just have a logistics problem getting them into the right places.
Yeah, it's if anything wants to, if anybody were to take an exterior view and come with a thesis that human beings do not face difficult situations well, this is one of them. Now, the great majority of us have taken sensible precautions, but there's a sizable number of people who haven't taken proper precautions, refused to take proper precautions, governments who twiddled their thumbs instead of planning for every possible contingent for a vaccine and its delivery. The government is acting like, government of Ontario is acting like we're at the stage of understanding that we were a year ago today, as opposed to having a year under our belt of experiencing this and having a year of time to prepare a schedule. Something planned. They should have released a plan for vaccinations before we even had the vaccine.
Yeah,
just to let us know that there was something coming.
Yeah, and behind that plan, you know, you mobilize the, you know, hospitals, the outpatient clinics, you know, YMCAs, YWCAs, you know, the pharmacies, your personal doctors, you know, the network, you know, you set up all these clinics so that when you have the vaccine, they're saying like, well, we don't want to start a clinic and then run out of vaccine. It's like, well, then put a closed sign on it. And then when you get vaccine, open it up again. Sure. Starting and stopping is not the way you want to run a business. I mean, ask anyone in Ontario who's been subject to lockdowns. That's not the way you want to run a business. You don't say, well, when we get enough, it's going to be worthwhile to open, when you're sitting on, you know, 1.2 million, you know, doses out there. You know, say, well, what is enough for you at this point then? You know, when do you think you can keep running? You know, scale them back, maybe, but everything from the, you know, the website rollout to the phone banks has just been a disaster. And not just in Ontario, it's been a real problem in a lot of places. In BC, their website went down because I think it was TELUS, you know, wasn't able to support the infrastructure because so many people wanted the vaccine that, you know, it's like, oh, what a surprise. People are going to be pounding on the system. You've got to stress test these things. I mean, you know, that's the software business does that all the time. What happens if everyone wants to do something all at once? Will it go down, or is there going to be a queue? Are you going to have do you have a spillover regime? Do you have a helpful message to tell people? And, you know, we had people getting hung up on and after being on hold for like 2 hours, you know, you've got a plan for all these eventualities. You just sit around a boardroom table with a whiteboard and say, okay, what's going to happen? And it doesn't appear that anyone's really done that.
And isn't that kind of staggering.
Well, it is. I mean, you know, considering, again, like I said, the run-up to this, and this was on everyone's wish list that we have the vaccine, and, you know, and I don't know what it is. I don't know if it is, you know, the people in charge just don't believe in big government. You know, big government is one of those things that allows you to plan and work with the community to do things. If you don't have bodies to do the planning, you know, you don't have lists, you don't believe in a system that actually, you know, gets into people's lives. I don't know what, you know, I don't know if there's an ideological problem or just sheer incompetence, you know, and I wouldn't rule out sheer incompetence, because there's a lot of people, you know, who are in provincial government who, quite frankly, shouldn't be running a lemonade stand, but they've been put into important positions during a time of crisis. And frankly, a lot of them are just not up to it.
Yeah. The fact that the Conservative government in Ontario continues to pull high is kind of a surprise, I suppose, when you consider that people need to believe that the people in charge know what they're doing, because otherwise the thought is too frightening. That could be the reason for it. And the fact that the NDP has been in Ontario has been a very weak opposition, and the Liberals, nobody knows who that leader is. He has no profile, and it's difficult when you're the third party to get the media to pay any attention to you. Ford gets daily press. It's not great press, but it still puts him in people's minds as this is the guy in charge. And he continues to ride high, unlike Jason Kenney in Alberta, who's riding very low in the polls. For some reason, Doug Ford is riding high in the polls, high enough to get reelected. And he's made a complete boondoggle of the COVID response.
Yeah, and
what more do we need before we see, hey, this person is in over his head. He's not government material.
Yeah, and he's been very successful. And I think, you know, part of his success has been in repeating the same thing over and over again, which is the problem is with the feds. We're not getting enough vaccine. If we only had that, we'd be able to, you know, we'd be just sitting pretty. We'd be able to do our job, and we're being hamstrung by a lack of supply of vaccine from the federal government. And, you know, it's the world is clamoring for these vaccines. I mean, there are manufacturing jurisdictions like the United States that are not willing to share until their own populations have been vaccinated first. EU played with that for a while. India was talking about it. So, you know, there are real challenges in supply. But by and large, you know, when Canada's average, you know, of a vaccine in arms, as it stands right now, is 75.4%. Which tells me that there's more vaccine currently available than has been put into people's arms, then you have to start going, well, when, you know, when do you start taking some responsibility as a province for not getting, you know, getting it that last mile? And, you know, it's come in, but I think Ford has been very, very successful in convincing not just his supporters, but, you know, sort of the people who are bombarded with this message day after day after day, that, you know, we're not getting enough vaccines from the feds, and that's where the problem is. People start to believe it. It doesn't matter if it's true or not. I think his popularity comes from the fact that, you know, he's doing the best he can, and that, you know, darn federal government just is has botched the acquisition of vaccines.
Yeah, and that's the thing about a lie. Repeat it enough, stand behind it enough, and people will start to believe that it's true, because it seems like you believe it's true. And people don't think that anybody is an outright liar, even though there are people who are outright liars. You meet one or two of them in your life, but you don't meet a lot of people who are bold-faced liars, who will tell you a lie, knowing full well it's a lie, knowing full well that you know it's a lie, but they'll still stand behind it. I've met more than two because I've worked in the entertainment industry. But there are, it is outside of our human experience generally to believe somebody's lying. And our dichotomy has been lying or telling the truth, as opposed to mistaken.
Yeah, and I would have thought that, and maybe it'll happen, but time will tell that once it became really obvious, especially in Ontario, that there is an abundance of supply in the freezers, that people will start to twig to the idea that, wait a second, maybe the problem isn't the supply that the provinces are getting. Maybe the problem is the provinces. As those numbers get bigger and bigger and bigger, as the surplus get, we're now at 1.2 million, give or take, doses available in Ontario for getting into people's arms. You think when that number gets big enough, people will start to realize, maybe it isn't being starved for supply is the problem. Maybe it's just incompetence of the people who are actually in charge of getting it into the pharmacies. But I don't know if that's going to happen because people are funny. And that lie is so ingrained at this point. People are still talking about it, on Twitter and Facebook and all the rest, that the problem in Ontario is, that goddamn Justin Trudeau, and he didn't get us enough vaccines.
Yeah, and well, we'll continue to live this era in history, and observe and comment on it as it goes on. I'm looking forward to the day we do the show and people aren't wearing masks anymore. People aren't required to wear masks anymore. And I don't really have a projection for when that will be, but boy, I can't wait.
Well, it'll be a trade-off because we won't have to wear a mask, but we will have to wear pants again, especially on Zoom.
All right. Thank you, Stephen,
For that image. There you
for that
go.
image, and for the conversation today. I always treasure it.
Oh well, and I have to mention there was a really funny, I don't know if you saw it, a really funny subtweet. I'm not sure, I don't think they're necessarily fans of ours, but it was a very funny one about what a love-in it is when you and I talk. And I don't necessarily feel that way. I think, well, not that I'm not fond of you. Let me put that out there. But we always have a good time. But we tend to agree on a lot of subjects, but I think the value of a discussion isn't necessarily going at each other, hammering tongs and disagreeing and throwing the furniture. But someone had a very, very funny subtweet about you and I talking and just what a love-in it is. So thank you for giving me a chuckle.
Yeah, people are so conditioned now when it's about politics, people yelling at each other as opposed to people discussing. People perhaps like-minded discussing issues. And to that person, if you're still listening, thank you for participating. At least you participated in social media with us.
Well, thanks for giving us a laugh.
Yes. And that's it for Stephen and Stephen. Stephen Lawton's can be found on Twitter at StephenLautens. And his Twitter feed is very informative and entertaining. I encourage you to follow Stephen. My Twitter feed, I never pay attention to it, so don't bother. Thank you, Stephen.
Hey, well, always a pleasure. And like I say, next week, depending on how things are going, we'll be back again.
Yes, that's Stephen Lawton's. I'm Stephen Kersner. This has been Stephen and Stephen. Thank you for listening.